Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Guten Tag and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's edition, we are going to discuss all the action from match day 21. I don't know why my notes are wrong, but we're going to continue on with this. It was another epic weekend of football. The chefs cooked up a buffet of goals, drama, red cards, disappointment, defensive lapses, the whole shebang-a-bang, really. One for the culinary experts to really dive into. Speaking of experts, let's bring in our Zweite Bundesliga expert and co-host of the podcast. It's the one and only Eva Lottebolle. Eva, good morning to you. Obviously, if we talk about our personal football teams, it could be a very sad weekend discussion. However, there were some really good games on the weekend. We saw some late highlights, lots of really good goals. Certainly a weekend for the neutrals.
Yeah, and obviously a weekend where you don't want to sit on a seat that's potentially being pulled away from underneath, at least in footy managers. Now, I think we, I think it still feels weird that we're match day 21, just 13 match days left. But it still kind of feels like a new season, and it feels like people are figuring stuff out again. At the same time, you always have in mind that you don't have that much time left to change things. Like when we talk about a couple of games where you might think, oh well, but we saw good stuff, and not everything is over. But at the same time, like, this is the point where it's not enough just to have some good things in your game, but you have to get the points. Some teams are very, very good at that. Some teams are not. Some teams are kind of in the middle. And yeah, I mean, for one team, which we will start to speak about now, is definitely happy they had the break, and that they got back to winning ways.
Yeah, we speak of Paderborn, who entered, as we remember, or if this is your first time listening, entered the winter break on a four-game losing run, and chaos was ensuing, and a team that was in desperate need of the break. Since then, they have been on a tear, three wins heading into their home game against Kaiserslautern, and they had a really good opportunity to make it four and seriously put the pressure on Heidenheim to get a result the following day. So, Kaiserslautern themselves had lost their first game away from home at the hands of St. Pauli, and they were hoping to get back to winning ways. This was a pretty... It was an interesting game. Both teams had some really good chances. I think, for mine, Kaiserslautern had some of the better opportunities to score. The one that comes to mind in the second half is the Terence Boyd one. It's a wonderful ball in. It gets to Boyd. It was a tough chance to take, having to contort the body the way he did. The fact he got something on it, and a lot of it, was quite impressive, but it rattled the woodwork. It was going to take something special to break the deadlock at the home deluxe arena, and it was the hosts who took advantage. It was Yannis Hoyer's wonderful free kick on 80 minutes for his third goal of the campaign, and to be honest, didn't know he had that in him. Didn't know that he had that set-piece acumen. And I would say, if I was to critique anything, maybe Luther's positioning was a little bit off. Although I feel like when the ball comes over the wall, it's like you should know where it's going to go. As someone who only conceded one free kick in his 4-year playing career, you just feel like he should have done a little bit better. But Kaiserslautern did push for another goal. They were unable to find it. It means that Kaiserslautern have now lost two away games in a row, and very much like Dorothy, they are looking to get back home. it is a, it's also a really damning thing about their defense. They haven't had a clean sheet since that win over Karlsruhe back in October. And they've got Greta Fert coming up on the world feed, which is going to be a very big Saturday afternoon game for them. But we should talk about Paderborn because they were obviously in a lot of trouble heading into the break. They've turned the tide. They're very much nipping at the heels of Heidenheim, just 2 points behind them. In the playoff spots, they've got more wins than Heidenheim. They've got more goals scored. Heidenheim has the better defensive record. It's been quite impressive, the turnaround. We talked about teams that needed to figure it out over the winter break. You could make a case for at least 10 sides that, you know, had to put in the work during the break. And Paderborn were able to do that. And now they're in a situation where, much like the start of the season, we can genuinely take them seriously as a not only as a playoff contender, but if the two sides who are clear at the top make a mistake, they're very much in a prime position to pounce.
Yeah, and I mean, in a way, obviously, they were lucky to get a win here because of all the things you just said. About the free kick, I think there are two types of free kicks. The ones like, if we're looking like at the likes of Tietz, where you just know it doesn't really matter what you do at a goalkeeper, there's someone kicking that free kick or that set piece in general where it's, they're so good at it. It's very, very difficult to put the wall up correctly, to stand there. And then you have people like Enes Haya where you just don't expect them to go and take that set piece. And I think it's difficult for a goalkeeper then to imagine where it can go. Maybe if it's going to be a direct or indirect free kick. So I think it was just a very good free kick, and I wouldn't really try to search for mistakes at Kaiserslautern, but more that was just a surprise to everyone that Hoyer stepped up there. I have to say, I really like, if we're talking about a player that made an impact for Kaiserslautern or has tried to make an impact more or less in their team, is Nicolai Rapp, who obviously came from Werder Bremen. I liked him a lot in this game. He was involved in a lot of offensive action. First half, obviously, Clement took over there a bit. That a lot of scenes where they got forward, Clement was involved, but at the same time, Rapp had their best chance in the first half. He has a good combination play going on with Zimmer, and obviously that chance where you're talking about Boyd, which he misses, very good combination between those two. And obviously it could have ended in a draw in the end as well. I thought that Paderborn had a lot of problems solving like attacks and especially scenes in the box that was not very clear who was going to defend how. And they were a bit lucky in the end that they got away with all 3 points. Obviously, proving once again that you have this team, that you have times where nothing works, and then you have times where kind of everything works in your favor. And it's definitely one of those Paderborn games. And for Kaiserslautern, as you've mentioned, they're really hoping to get back home. We've seen at the start of this season that away from home, it's where they might struggle from time to time. Still, we're picking up points. So, yeah, maybe happy they have that home game coming up against Fürth. And they're traveling to Magdeburg. Tough crowd to be as well. But, yeah, and for Paderborn, I think it was really, really important for them to get back in the saddle. They obviously have two games coming up with teams where we aren't very sure where they're standing at the start of 2023. Obviously, Kiel is still the team that amazes me the most, where it's very fun to watch. And I'm not going to say again that it's going to be a potential fun game to watch, because I said this last time with Paderborn and Kaiserslautern, and I feared a lot that it's going to end 0-0. So just not going to say anything regarding potential goals on the score sheet here. And then obviously you have St. Pauli, we're going to talk about later, who are in a very good form so far, to say the least. And that could be a very interesting game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some really interestingly hard to predict games coming up because the opponents that they've got are very up and down. I mean, obviously St. Pauli have won four on the bounce to start the new calendar year, but we don't really know what we're expecting from Kiel, and Magdeburg could pull a rabbit out of the hat like they did last week. But yeah, the next few weeks are pivotal for them because they are the best opportunities for them to maximize their points, continue this fantastic run, and really put pressure on the teams ahead of them. We know Heidenheim really struggle away from home. Darmstadt showed an element of vulnerability on the weekend. We'll talk about them in Group 3. I thought they were not very good, but they still won. And Hamburg, you know, there are ways to shut them down in not creating a lot of goal-scoring opportunities. In the last 2 weeks, have done that, but they've found ways to find the back of the net. So it's quite fascinating. The Paderborn situation is fascinating. Kaiserslautern dropping off the peloton a little bit. They're or dropping back into the peloton, I should say. But they're still great. There were still great phases for them. They got Boyd more involved. Like, they were able to at least... They gave him a chance, not just a half chance last week. You know, he was involved a lot more. And for them to succeed going forward, they're going to have to keep feeding the German-born American. And if they can do that, they're a really good chance of getting back into the winner's circle. We mentioned Hamburg before. We'll talk about their game now. They welcomed Arminia Bielefeld to the Volkspark Stadion. Just under 57,000 made their way to see a pretty interesting game. It was tight. A lot of defensive actions required. Not a lot of shots on goal. Each team had, I think it was 10 apiece for the game. It was almost the perfect start for Bielefeld. They thought they'd taken the lead early on. A really great ball in from Okugawa. Not cleared initially from Daniel Hoyer Fernandez, and the ball fell to Frederick Jekyll, who nicely put it through the back of the net. And it looked good. You're like, yes, here comes the upset train. But he and Klaus were both offside in that situation, so no bueno. Stayed nil-nil until 26 minutes, where Hamburg took the lead through Ludovic Rice. Takes a wicked deflection off Ramos. There's not much Friesel could really do there. I mean, it's just unlucky. I think that's the best way to describe it. It was a very unlucky scene. And it stayed 1-0 at the break. Bielefeld did get a goal back. They were a bit more active offensively in the second half. It was a fortuitous way that the ball found itself to Bastian Ovchikpa. But hey, he took it well. It's not often we've seen him score with the right foot, but he calmly put the ball in the back of the net. And at 1-1, you're feeling there are things happening, but Hamburg, you know, as the saying goes, you're at your most vulnerable defensively after you've scored. And Bielefeld immediately turned very vulnerable. They could have made it 2-1 literally minutes, seconds after the goal. But Martin Friesel pulled off an unbelievably great save. The first one, effort from Benesch, hits the crossbar. Maybe Friesel gets a tip. And the ball falls to, was it Yatta? I think. No, Yunus David. It falls to Yunus David. And the second save is unbelievable. He sticks a claw out. He's able to parry it over the crossbar. And Friesel was good in this game, especially when required. And he made some really, you know, made a couple of really good saves. But the score at level pegging did not last very long, because on 57 minutes, Hamburg would score the game-winning goal. It's a wonderful ball in out wide, missed by every... I mean, it's a defensive breakdown for Bielefeld, where Ramos and Andrada both gravitate towards Glatzel, which is understandable, but it leaves Ochikpa in a really uncomfortable position. He's got a 2-on-1 with Rice and Yatta, and he has a controller disconnect. if you play video games, you know what that's like. The controller just stops. He is not aware of the danger, and then Yata punts the ball into the crossbar and in, and there's your 2-1, your final score. Hamburg keep the pace with Darmstadt. It was a vital win for them, who they have now on the weekend on in prime time, which we're all looking forward to that game. Bielefeld, on the other hand, well, it's a really tough road, and it's like a choose your own adventure book, but the book has decided that the adventure has already been chosen for you. It is a very dark, dim, and dangerous path with Heidenheim, Braunschweig away, and then Darmstadt at home in their next three. Eva, you were there at the Volksparkstadion, and there was obviously not a lot to like about certain aspects of the facilities, but in general, the game itself, they showed a bit of courage in the second half, Bielefeld, but again, it's the defensive mistakes, the lack of communication, and just it's the moments in games that Bielefeld can't grasp and take that's really killing them. And we saw it last week against Rostock. One scene is all hands are needed to win the game. And, you know, in what was a relatively even game, it was, again, one situation, one defensive lapse. And, again, Bielefeld leave with nothing.
Yeah, I think a lot to unpack here. First and foremost, I want to talk about like what was personal-wise on the pitch. Like, I obviously, Klaus got a start, which I didn't really understand. And I know that people are out there saying he's better than Serra and he had more impact in that game than Serra. Want to prove you wrong here. Normally, when Klaus is on the pitch, where he gets the most on the sheet, I would say, statistically, is winning area duels. He won one area duel in this whole game. Maybe it's something to do that you didn't really have that long balls coming in as much, because Klaus was, he basically was one of the players in midfield from time to time. Like, if you look at a heat map, his main positioning is actually midfield, and like Hakan Okugawa before him. And there was like, there was even a situation where he got the ball from Faisal himself and like didn't really make sense to me in that area. Obviously someone, so first of all that, and obviously Serra, he had a good chance. This is what I meant with when I speak about Paderborn and Kaiserslautern, saying you have teams who where things are working in their favor. You also had this game where nothing went in favor for Bielefeld, more or less. Like, not referee-wise, not luck-wise, not defending-wise. So everything kind of crumbled together here. And, like, this is why I said, it wasn't a bad game. It was much, much better than I expected, especially in the second half. But it's not enough. I also think that there is a reason why the second half was better. And this is why, because Vassiliadis was subbed off. He has his good moments, that, but especially in that game when you have an overcrowded midfield, in a way. I mean, I have to say, I was skeptical about this whole three in the back thing at first, but I especially think for Chipka and Klünter, it's the system that fits them better, because Chipka can much more play on his offensive strength, and Klünter obviously can play on his speed down the line. And you could see that from time to time. And then especially with Kornsbruch on the left side, kind of, as well. They work together very well with Ochipka. This is why I don't understand why Ochipka is always being subbed off at some stage in the game. Personally, it does not make sense for me. But I did like that. But you have, like, this overcrowding midfield where you have someone like Vassiliadis who doesn't really seem to fit well, and this is why I actually like Kornsbruch better, because if you already have three in the back, you have Ochipka and Klünter, obviously are defensive players as well. You don't really need someone like Vassiliadis, who at the moment is more focused on defensive action. He scored 2 goals this season, but that's not the point. And he makes too many mistakes, in my opinion. That's why I like Kornsbruch better. And yeah, that's something obviously I wanted to touch on, then obviously you had Lasma coming on very unlucky as well. What I would like to see probably is actually Corbenu getting a start against Heidenheim, maybe even for Okugawa, because he doesn't seem to be 100% there yet after the winter break. Similar to Hack, but still, you can't really switch Corbenu for Hack. You don't really have a replacement for Hack, and that's why I let him get play on and maybe Corbenu and get back to Serra. Maybe even have two up front with Klose and Serra. But I don't think that Klose is fit to play from the beginning on. That's just my personal opinion. Then obviously I quickly want to touch on Daniel Siebert and his assistants. Because first of all, it's a very correct offside decision, but I don't get why the decision wasn't being seen on the pitch immediately. Like, I sat on the other side of the field and I thought something is weird. Like, Yeke was just too open in that scene. Something didn't seem right. And it wasn't difficult to see. Like, he was, what was that, 30 to 40 centimeters. And that's on a pitch that's a lot to see, at least, or even if it was a whole step. So that's something I don't get. Then we have two scenes actually in the first half where we could discuss penalties for Bielefeld. The first one was Klünter. None of those scenes are in the highlights, so I can't really give you anything on that. But where people then said, okay, Okugawa or Hack was probably offside afterwards as well. Doesn't really matter if Klünter is fouled in the first instance. But that's just my personal opinion. And then, obviously, you have the scene with Vassiliadis. And this is the scene where Daniel Siebert goes out, checks, and decides it's not a penalty. And we discussed this last week. We discussed how the VAR is, how it is in place. As of now, it is not working. And it's not how it should work. Because if the communication is, hey, did you see someone stumped on Vassiliadis' foot? And Daniel Siebert was like, yes, it's not a foul for me. First of all, I don't understand that, because stamping as of this season is something the rule said is always being, it's always yellow for the player. Mm-hmm. Okay, first of all. And I don't know, he just stands on his foot for 4 seconds. You can see that. And then there was this explanation that in some ways, Vassiliadis still reaches the ball, but normally that's not a good enough explanation for not giving a penalty. And I mean, we're going to talk about a penalty later in this podcast where we both agree, before starting the podcast, that we don't really understand why it was a penalty. And then obviously, if Danny Siebert says, I saw it on the pitch, it's not a penalty for me, okay, but then he goes out, checks it, and still decides it's not a penalty. And that is something I do not understand. And obviously you had another scene at the end of the game where nobody understands as of now why it wasn't a penalty. Every Bielefeld fan was like, this should be a penalty for Hayes foul. Why? And he goes out again and checks it. It's something I don't understand. Like, I really, really don't understand it. And I just don't have words, because we're not talking about a referee who just got up from like the Dritte Liga. We're talking about a FIFA referee, and this is something I cannot understand. And then the whole game, I mean, I watched this game with the referee, and he didn't understand what was happening. He said it's not in any way good. Like, there were so many moments where Danny Siebert was just not knowing what to do. You had the feeling he was not confident in his decisions. Don't get me wrong, he wasn't the reason why we lost, obviously, only because you get a penalty doesn't mean you score and all that. But we don't need the VAR anymore for that then. if you compare it, I watched the Champions League game, Frankfurt versus Napoli last night, where you had a red card against Kolomwani, which at first sight I thought, why the hell is this red? Kolomwani plays the ball first, but then obviously he himself is responsible that the ball gets away from him, and he tries to, what you do, like, to get to the ball, which the Napoli player is there before him, and then it's a very unfortunate foul, but Kolomwani stamps on the Napoli player's leg, whatever, and the referee says it's a red card. And when you look at that scene, you say, okay, that's correct, because fouls like that, we normally say if it's above some sort of point above the feet, it's always a red card. And the VAR wasn't even consulted in that way. Yeah. And that's how VAR should work, because the on-field call is correct. If you give it like that, if you see it like that immediately, there's no way you should recall that decision. Like, because then you can't give a card at all in that way, because then it's not only a yellow card, because then you would say, well, I mean, it's not that kind of a foul. So this is how the VAR should work. And again, we're talking about a FIFA referee who operates on that level of football, who referees Champions League game. And this is where I don't understand how, like, and this is why, once again, if the VAR continues, we need way better transparency for the fans in the stadium. It's just like, we need some sort, like, you are, as a spectator in the stadium, you have to wait for highlights. Mm-hmm. And when they don't show you that in the evening, like, you don't have any kind of proof. And you need some sort of video proof what is happening in the stadium. Every stadium in the Bundesliga and the Second Liga has some sort of digital stuff where you can show people what's happening. And that's, my rant is over, but... Yeah, I mean, I've said it in games where my team wasn't involved, so, and this is where even highest foul fans didn't really understand what was going on, so, yeah.
I'm going to bring a receipt to the table and hand this to the concierge. This exact same situation of the stomping happened the day before in the Fürth Düsseldorf game, which saw Jordi De Vrij get a yellow card, and then he got sent off because he wouldn't shut up. That's just because he's an idiot. Brain fade moment. So there's the tickets. There is an easy solution to this. There's such an easy solution to this. And I hope someone at the DFL is actually listening to this, because this is what needs to happen for greater transparency when it comes to reviews with a video assistant referee. Let's have the referees mic'd, and let's have them... This is something that happened in Australia where they tested it. You could hear, not only on the telecast, but this should happen in the stadium as well, like in the NFL when they call a penalty, they call the penalty as it is, right? When the VAR is explaining the process and we're going through the, like, how the decision is being looked, the fans in the stadium should have not only visual representation on all of the televisions that are in the stadium, but also let's hear the process. Let's get that unwavering, get rid of all the gray area, just straight up transparency, so that everyone understands what's going through the mind of the referee, how they're viewing this process, and how we can get a decision that is A, correct, because that's what the VAR's there for, to get rid of the howler, and B, that we don't have reckless discourse of, well, this happened and I didn't understand what the process was because I was at the ground. I just saw that the decision was overturned. And I don't know why the decision was overturned, but it was overturned because there must have been some sort of error, a mistake. Great example was watching the J-League where it failed. The system failed. J-League game between Sanfrecce Hiroshima and Hokkaido Consadole Sapporo, where a goal was clear. They don't have goal line technology, much like the Zweite Bundesliga. It's all VAR. A clear goal was scored by Hiroshima, and it's clear as day. But the technology failed. No goal was given on the pitch. The technology failed, and it took them 10 minutes to realize that the technology wasn't working. They stopped the game, and because 10 minutes had passed, they couldn't overturn what should have been a goal, and the game ended 0-0. Now, obviously, in that situation, like, that was a big game-changing situation where Hiroshima were miles... They were on their way. They were going to win the game. Well, they were in a position, but they couldn't conjure up anything after a clear goal not being allowed. We got to fix the system. VAR has, in my opinion, and I'm probably in the minority, VAR has a place, because I understand the... But we've got to make it more transparent. You've got to make it more fan-friendly, and we've got to put it in a situation where the referees and officials are made accountable for the decisions they make, and they're not being hidden behind some sort of organization that is protecting them from essentially making bad decisions. And this is the problem that refereeing has gone through all season, where the game is being officiated differently every single week, every single day of an individual match day. Like, we cannot have this, and... In the future, if we continue this, you know, we're just going to create more and more havoc. And who the hell will want to be a referee? Like, we need referees for this game. But if you've got a FIFA-eligible referee showcasing that he was almost out, he was basically out of his depth in a pretty big game, then we've made a mistake. It's a system that needs fixing. That's enough of my rant. Hamburg were fine. They were pretty underwhelming, if we're honest, but they managed to win the game. They've got big games coming up. Two World Feed games, Darmstadt and then Nürnberg. Both World Feed, and then they've got Karlsruhe, whereas Bielefeld's Road, really difficult. Heidenheim, Braunschweig, and Darmstadt. Speaking of Heidenheim, let's talk about them. Jesus, we've gone through half an hour already. Whew. Well, we can keep this one short. They took on Nürnberg, and this was just ugly. When you are at a talent deficit and a quality deficit, as Nürnberg were against Heidenheim, the one thing you can't do is to gift wrap goals. And boy, Tim Kleindienst must have thought it was Christmas, because the first two goals he scored in this game were absolute gifts. Mistakes from Nürnberg. The first one was a Jan Jimmerer attempt clearance. I have no idea what it was. What it could be described as an excellent assist, because he found Kleindienst on the laces. He had Hübner for company, but he beats Hübner and he beats Vindel for the 1-0. And the second one, I don't understand why Jens Kastrup is trying to keep the ball in. He's being pressed heavily by Pick. Just kick the ball out. Play it safe. You can get back and set up defensively. He tries to do something way too much. Coughs the ball up. Patience from Pick. Eventually gets the ball to Kleindienst. Makes it 2-0. And then the 3-0 shortly before the break for Kleindienst to complete the hat trick. He's probably never had such an easier time of it. Again, it was Pick with a really easy assist. Just hopeless defending. I know they were down to 10 men, but at that point when Valentino just studded Besta, and I'm absolutely okay with that being a red card. It was reckless. It was late. It was unnecessary. It was dangerous. And that kind of killed the game. They were gone by then, and then Kleindienst made it 4 on 81 minutes to become the league's top goal scorer with 15. Jonas Forenbach with an excellent... I mean, such a delightful ball for Kleindienst to go get. He climbs and gets it and makes it 4. And then Marnon Busch, 5 minutes later, makes it 5. And that means that time has finally ended for Marcus Weinziel's, I'm going to say, miserable tenure at Nürnberg. Speaking to a particular Nürnberg fan last week, it was a difficult conversation to talk about a bad team with a bad manager. He's gone, and Dieter Hecking is going to take over for the remainder of the season. He obviously brings a wealth of experience, but this is a classic case of, well, I've tried everything, now I've got to go do it. And there are obviously other reasons involved, which, you know, my financial situation, but... Yeah, let's talk about Nürnberg, because they are the big talking point. It's a big loss. This is statistically their worst season in the Zweite Bundesliga to date in terms of goal difference and points accumulated from this period. This is worse than the season where they barely avoid the losing and they won in the playoff. One thing that struck me interesting was the sort of naivety of what Weinziel said a day after being let go, which was that he didn't feel like the players gave up on him, or he didn't feel as if it was the right decision for Nürnberg. But when you're that bad, and essentially when they beat Dusseldorf in the cup and they beat Regensburg last week, essentially for me it's the equivalent of putting a Band-Aid on a severed leg. It's not going to stop the bleeding. It's not going to stop the fact that you've got one leg. It is just, you are just in a dire situation. And honestly, we talked about this before we started. There was an easy solution, and it should have been Hecking taking the responsibility from the outset when removing Robert Klaus. It made no sense financially, nor did it, based on his recent resume, to put Marcus Weinzierl in that job in the first place.
Yeah, or just don't let Robert Klaus go in that way. Like, because we haven't seen... I mean, defensively, there were times where they seemed to be more stable, but, I mean, they just lost 5-0. So, this is the thing. I mean, we were both very skeptical about appointing Marcus Weinzierl from the get-go. He's not one of the cheapest managers, just if you look where he has been the past years. I mean, I don't know the exact kind of... money-wise, position-wise, at, but I mean, just from how long he's been in the business, he's not going to be one of the cheapest managers you get. I've seen Bielefeld fans wanting him now. Why the hell would you do that? But thank you very much. It's like the thing is that we talked about that this cup win could be like a bad thing hidden in a good thing, because obviously it meant money for Nuremberg. At the same time, it gives a very wrong impression of where Nuremberg was at the time. And it's a phrase, but the Pokal, you can't compare it. You just cannot compare. If we, for example, look back at São Paulo last year, where they had a very good, I think where they won against Dortmund in the Pokal. At the same time in the league, they were not there at all. So you cannot compare that, and it gives a wrong impression. And at the same time, like we're four games into 2023. You had that cup win, and then you let him go after a game where you say from the get-go, this is not where we imagine we could win. There were other games. And I mean, at the same time, this is... before the Sandhausen game, this is going to be fun for both sides, because both sides have no clue at all what's going to happen. I mean, they both know who's going to be the manager, but they have no clue at all what's going to happen whatsoever. And obviously, at this stage, a lot is on the line for Nuremberg, because obviously they don't really have money to get a new manager. So Hecking was the only choice from the get-go. At the same time, if Hecking doesn't succeed, I don't expect him to just... because he's responsible for the team. He's responsible for the people on the pitch. You let someone like Manuel Winsheimer go, who... and we said this from the beginning on, we find it very, very weird. And they play them in 3 weeks. Like, we find it very, very weird to get someone like Winsheimer away to a direct opponent in the relegation battle and give him away for free. Like, we don't know whether there's any sort of loan fee, but they don't have money. Like, then let him go to another country where you and sell him, where you potentially get money out of it. But this is not how it works. So in so many ways, Hecking's job is on the line. Obviously, we all remember Christian Fjell from his time at Dynamo Dresden. I'm always not sure how this works. If someone comes back from being a manager for quite some time, getting back in the coaching job, same time having someone who has been head coach at a club. I mean, at a club who was fighting for relegation or for staying in the league, for survival. Always not sure how that works together. But as of now, I'm not completely convinced by this whole situation. And Nuremberg has been in a downfall for quite some time. And I mean, I remember, I mean, when they won against Bielefeld, this was a game where we all said, like, don't really oversell this. Yeah. Like, did not have a lot to do with your performance, but your opponent's performance. And this has been the case ever since. So, yeah, I mean, this is always the what would have happened or what if question, but what would have happened if you stayed with Robert Klaus? You see teams like Braunschweig who stayed with their coach and they're not in the most dangerous position where they're at the beginning of the season. Obviously, teams like Braunschweig is going to be always hard to completely fight that off in your first league back, first season back. But yeah, and I mean, for Heidenheim, they were probably hoping it's not going to be a repetition of the Hamburg game. But I mean, for that, Nürnberg would have had done something at all. They just got a bit more stable in the second half. But even then, if at that point where they got more stable, they still conceded two goals. So yeah, I mean, it's Valentini being the hero one week, being the kind of anti-hero the week after, and especially for someone who's so experienced, yeah, this shouldn't happen. And I would agree that's a correct red card when it's being called on the pitch immediately. You can't really take that back either, similar to last night. And yeah, this is definitely not how you should defend a Tim Kleindienst at all. And I think he was, yeah, very happy with that game. It looked a bit like training from him from time to time. But like, yeah, I just have that whole defense, Kastrup, Schindler, Hübner, communication wasn't working at all. And it was, yeah, as you've mentioned, as you pointed out and described to us, it was just way too easy for them to get through. And I mean, then quickly want to touch on one last player, and that's Florian Flick. I do feel sorry for him a bit because he's like more or less running for his life in this game, but it seems like he's running nowhere. And it looks like he's on a infinitive tempo run game where he's just trying to jump, but he's never ending nowhere. So I do feel sorry for him.
He's like the mouse with that's in the wheel, and that's. I mean, I heard Weinzierl was happy with his performance because he runs a lot. That's definitely an area that no one can question, is that he does a lot of running. But yeah, I feel sorry for him. He goes from one shit situation to another. Not ideal. All right, we've gone nearly 43 minutes and we've only covered three games. So we're doing great. We'll take a break. I think you can take a break as well. We'll be back in a moment. We'll start our Group 2 game, starting with Greuther Fürth and Fortuna Düsseldorf. Two sides that have been a bit up and down so far in 2023 have been Greuther Fürth and Fortuna Düsseldorf. Fürth coming off that defeat last time out, whereas Fortuna were back in the winner's circle. Let's just say in this game, the errors were very much magnified for both sides, but one in particular very, very costly. Some of the defensive mistakes in this one were nearly unforgivable, but one team took advantage, and that was Greuther Fürth, and in particular, Ragnar Ake, who scored twice in this game. The first goal, very simple, rose up like a phoenix to head the ball in, and the second goal was just a defensive calamity from Fortuna Düsseldorf of in those kinds of situations where defender has to, it's like a next person up in the chain. So when Clara decides to go for a ball, which he probably was never going to get, you need Emmanuel Yoa to come across and defend Ake. The problem is that not only did he give Ake goal side, but he was nowhere near him, and the 2-0 was there. So Ake's got 5 goals this season, but they weren't a miss from their own defensive gremlins. Fürth, because the goal they conceded was pretty unlucky, but opportunistic for Düsseldorf. Jurrit Hendricks was kind of trying to be a little bit of a dribbly boy, get through the defence. He kind of loses possession. It cannons off a Fürth defender, and it falls to Christopher Pedersen, who made it 2-1. And as we mentioned earlier in the episode, Jordi Device would get sent off in this game. Initially, a yellow card for the stomping. But one referee you don't want to come across as an angry boy is Marco Fritz, who also has quite the fuse on him. And it didn't take him long to not like what Yordi said and fire the second yellow card. And in the space of a second, he received a double yellow and was on his way. I don't know who to start with. I feel like we should talk about Dusseldorf because, and I'm not the only one who shares this opinion, speaking to a few Dusseldorf fans, is that it was probably the first time that Daniel Thun ran out of ideas, tactical ideas, to beat a side. Fürth had their number quite comfortably. They pressed really well. Fürth should have had a 3-0 through Max Christiansen after Kastenmeier overplayed the situation. But Christiansen hit the post. You can take him from somewhere, but you know either that somewhere stays with. Thank you. Yep, that's good. That's the response I was looking for. They looked lost. They were very disappointing. They lacked energy. They lacked intensity. And I'm just a bewildering display. After the win against Sandhausen, felt that they were on their way to turning the corner, but they're back to square one once again.
Yeah, you know, where you can really see that Kovnarski is missing from that Dusseldorf game. I mean, this is what we saw last week, that this is probably one of the biggest defeats for Fortuna, that he will be out for a couple of weeks. And you could see that. I mean, obviously you had that chance by Daniel Ginchek. He's still one of the people I just forget he plays at Düsseldorf. Sorry to say that, but I do. And then obviously you have the responsibility on someone like Niemic, who has been a tragic figure in the last couple of weeks. You have Niemic and Hennings, who weren't really working in this game, upper come. So, I mean, you could see that when Thun changed to 4-3-3 in the second half, that it made some impact. But in a way, the game was already done and dusted at some stage there, because you already had were one man or one goal down, and Fürth was very comfortable with their lead. I don't really know. I mean, both teams are like around midfield in this kind of, if you look at the last four games or all games in 2023, both teams have 6 points, 2 wins, 2 defeats. I think for Düsseldorf, we were questioning whether it's going to be enough. And as mentioned, I think without Kovnarski, it's going to be a bit tough. And then obviously, if you have a red card or you get second yellow, like Jordi De Vries, which just does not help at all if you already have problems around that. So yeah, for Fürth, they definitely will hope to get into some, I don't know, consistent waters for the next three games. Definitely, like the game against Hanover and Pauli, probably going to be a game to look at. Kaiserslautern's just, well, we still don't really know where to put them expectation wise. But Hanover and Pauli, those are the games Fürth kind of wants to know where they're at. And Düsseldorf, obviously, they have potentially two easier games coming up with Braunschweig and Regensburg before Heidenheim comes to the Merkur-Spiel Arena in March. But they will need to find a way to compensate Kovnarski, to look for a way how to work with the players that they have.
Yeah, another player that they're missing is Mikhail Karbovnik as well at left back. Can also play in the middle, but you know, he's been at his most dynamic when he's played there, and he's had a muscular injury, which is why he hasn't featured the last few weeks. That's why Ayo was playing as a left back. But not a lot for me to really add here. It was just you know, Fürth taking the points, getting the job done. Big games coming up, and for them, it's just really important to gap the teams below them and really get out of that relegation fight, death match, whatever you want to call it, battle royale. I mean, it can have many names, but yeah, interesting to see how both these teams go over the next few weeks before we hit the one and only international break. But yeah, that just. Yeah, all what we're looking for both teams is a bit of consistency, because they've definitely been consistently inconsistent. Much like the next team we're about to talk about, which is Holstein Kiel, who have been magnificently inconsistently inconsistent, consistently, and so on and so forth. They, of course, blew that game against Magdeburg last weekend, where they had the XG of over 5. They had all those great opportunities, and they fumbled all 3 points to a team that they should have beaten. But question is, would they make the same mistake? They started brilliantly. One player who was on it from minute one was Fabian Riese, who of course will be on his way to Hertha Berlin in the summer. Whether that will be in the Bundesliga or the Zweite Bundesliga, that is yet to be determined. So he'll be keeping an eye on that one. But he opened the scoring on 14 minutes, his 6th goal of the season, and then he would assist Holmbert Aron Finnjonsson, who... the Icelandic striker joined the club not this season, but last season. He was sent out on loan for the start of this campaign. He's come back because of the injuries to Benedikt Pikla, who I'd almost forgotten about. And they've been looking for a big number 9, and he nodded home to make it 2-0. And then Finn Becker scored just moments after the break to make it 3-0. Now, if you've heard this story before, we told it last week, but it had two different protagonists. It seems like the 3-0 lead is, in fact, not a safe lead anymore. And Kiel did everything in their power to give that 3-goal lead away. Because on 57 minutes, Braunschweig would score. Maurice Multalp, yep, that Multalp used to play at Heidenheim, also Osnabrück. His effort on goal, I think, should have been saved by Schreiber. I know it was absolutely chucking it down in Braunschweig. It was not one for the dry weather fans. Beaten by his near post. It was a good hit, though. And then they scored again on 69 minutes through a set piece. Daniel Weber got his 2nd of the campaign. And let it be known, Braunschweig playing with a makeshift defense. And I mean makeshift. If you ever heard the saying, that we've said it here before probably, the defense looked like they'd never played together. Well, that's because they'd never played together. They maybe on the training track, but they were strangers in the first half, much better in the second half. But Kiel just stopped. And they almost had the equalizer, Braunschweig. It was another set piece. It fell to Salo Dicali, but the ball skids on. It's an awkward height for him, and he can't put the ball into the back of the net. It's a defeat for Braunschweig, 3-2 the final score. I feel like we talk about Kiel a lot, about how we don't know. So maybe we won't talk about them as much. Let's talk about Braunschweig, because this was actually probably one of the weeks where it was okay to lose when you look at the standings. Teams from 12th to 18th. Only one team managed to pick up points, and we'll talk about them in Group 3. So it wasn't like the worst time to drop points, but they'll be disappointed because they actually fought really well after the 3-0, and they very much showed signs of a team that can fight out of this sort of relegation struggle. However, they obviously made the mistake of, you know, giving themselves such a deficit to begin with.
Yeah, and I think, especially like if you obviously, as you just mentioned, it was a difficult weekend for them defensively, just from the get-go. I mean, we touched on that last week, but still, like if you look at statistics, this like the 1-0 that was their 11th goal conceded after a cross, and the cross wasn't even that good, like. Yeah. It has a very weird height where you think it's Fabian Riese. You can see that he has to jump over. Where's that height? Where you're not sure where it's better to get there with the head or jump or do some weird stuff. So it is defendable. I mean, and then obviously for the second goal, we still discuss whether it should have counted or not, because you have that duo in midfield between Winsheimer and Lorenz. So similar to what we said at the beginning, group one, things are like, if things are not working out for you, they're not working out for you, period. And as you've mentioned, Kiel just gave up. Funny enough, it reminded me a bit of the Kiel Bielefeld game, where Bielefeld looked very comfortable. They could do whatever they want with Kiel, and then they're like Kiel back in the game. But that's a very Kiel thing to do. Like, it's, this is why I do want to see how the Kiel Paderborn game will look like, because you have one team, like, we all think back to the result in the Hinrunde, where you had that 7-2. But yeah, I mean, Kiel is just amazes me for to get back to Braunschweig. Obviously, the changes at halftime really, really helped them, with Montag for Marx, Lauber for Uja, Krause for Endo. Especially, I think the Uja substitution is quite interesting, because if we think back how much of a role he played in the Hinrunde, then he got injured, and it looks like he's still not 100% back in that form he was in. And yeah, it's obviously Mold help with a good impact. But still, like, there are mistakes Braunschweig makes for the 3-0, especially there are 18 seconds between their own throw-in, two chances, and then, like, how they conceded that, how Reze could just walk down the line, and how open Becker was. Yeah, like, I'm not sure. And at the same time, obviously, the game after the 3-2 was so just back and forth. Both teams were completely losing any sort of defending at that stage. Kiel had chances to make it 4-2. Dekali. And the Dekali thing is what amazes me. It's nearly the same situation as the Weber goal. Once again, there is a player completely open on the second post after a set piece, and Kiel just decides, well, I mean, it worked out well for them the first time, we're just going to let them do it again. And Dekali is just really, 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 really close in hitting that. So yeah, that's something where, as a Maserap, I wasn't sure what, like, those past 3 weeks where we just wouldn't be sure what to say to their team. Like, when we play very well, when we don't let opponents do a lot, we lose. When we play 50 minutes of good football and we start to just completely bottle it, we still win. Where do we go from here, especially if we play Paderborn? So this is where I'm going to go with my prediction again. I would imagine it could happen that a win against Paderborn, but lose against Sandhausen and Jahn Regensburg. And this is something like, lose to Paderborn, win against Sandhausen and Regensburg. This is what they have to do to not get sucked into the relegation fight. But, well, we'll see. It's Kiel. I'm not, like, I just make fun of them now, and in a way, the reason I always kind of get points in the tip kick in the end from time to time, so they're in my safe space. Very weird thing to say. Yeah, for Braunschweig, obviously difficult weeks coming up with Fortuna Düsseldorf, what we just spoke about. Then, I mean, Bielefeld and Nuremberg. So those are the two games where they hope part of their defending. I mean, obviously Nathan de Medina will return in the game against Fortuna Düsseldorf. With that information, as you may, but yeah, the games obviously against Bielefeld and Nuremberg are the ones where they hope they have more players to build on.
Yeah, all I can say is that your sort of prediction would make one particular co-host very angry, if that was to come true. So but I hope you're not a fortune teller, otherwise it is. And as someone from experience at being able to tell fortunes in real time, it's a curse. It is a curse. I've seen it happen. It's gross. All right, let's move on to Magdeburg and St. Pauli. St. Pauli were hoping to make it four on the bounce, whereas Magdeburg were hoping to make it two consecutive wins after a good trip north. They looked sharp early, did Magdeburg, and they were turning the screws and they got their goal. A mistake from what should have been a foul throw from Lert Pakarada. Just saying, can we actually call foul throws for what they are? It was such a foul throw. But Magdeburg benefited from it, so they won't care. It was a bad exchange. Pakarada with a really loose pass. Kunde picks it up in midfield. He finds Baris Atik, and Atik does the rest. Even with Matic draped all over him, it's a wonderful finish from Atik to make it 1-0. But the thing you can't discount about St. Pauli is that they are dangerous from set pieces. When you have someone like Pakarada who can whip in a mean ball, and you have someone like Jackson Irvine who essentially should, you know, have his own airline, you know, Irvine. I know it's terrible and I stole it from someone else. It's bad, but it's great because we love Jackson Irvine. He scored his fourth goal of the campaign. He loves using his noggin and he does it very, very well on and off the pitch, which is what we love. So as the game is coming down to its crescendo, it seems as if we're going to enter, it's going to be a draw. But someone forgot to tell Yakov Medic that he is not, in fact, a striker, but a centre-half. But boy, did he look like a striker in this scene. It's a wonderfully timed run, but it's such a delicate ball from Marcel Hartl, who, whether he should have been on the pitch because of his head injury, that's for another time. But, you know, anyway, it's a beautiful ball. Medic takes it first time. And he puts it in the back of the net, 2-1. It was tight. Like, you could have reviewed this over and over and over again, and it's the closest call. But the correct call is given. It's onside. St. Pauli win. Four wins in a row. That's equal to Darmstadt, who we'll talk about next, and Paderborn, who have been perfect to start the new year. It's just happening for St. Pauli. It's funny how we've spoken about it ad nauseam. The change has been great for them. They're playing a lot more simplistic. They look a bit more dynamic. Afflein, Daschner, and Metcalf didn't score. Metcalf came close in the first half. They're just such the more dynamic. You know, they've rolled in so many different options in that final third with like Eggestein, Otto, Matonovic, Mauridis as well, who missed an unbelievable chance. I mean, give me that chance, please. I beg. But they're just so dynamic now. Even though it's funny, they don't seem to be doing too much different to what they were previously doing. Just the personnel that they've got in that final third is far more dangerous than they were previously.
Yeah, and I think the key word is simplistic here, because this is something we were talking about when we recorded the preview of the second leg, and we kind of looked at what Fabian Hürze said, and he basically said we were overthinking situations. And you could really see that, first of all, between what worked before, so Pakarada finds someone, after a set piece or cross, you have, if everything simplistic doesn't work, you have the most simplistic thing to do, with which is set pieces. And they did that in this game, not, as you've mentioned, saying that Afflein, Daschner and Metcalf didn't work. Like, that's not the thing, but they weren't just not very successful in this game. And then obviously, I think we can talk about Vasile as well. I mean, it was the first goal they conceded, but they could have conceded more if it wasn't for Vasile. You had that situation against Castaños. We're not sure what the rest of the St. Pauli defense is doing there anyway, but okay. And yeah, obviously it looks like it's going to be one of those games where if you don't use your chances like the Maridis one, you're gonna lose. And then obviously enter Jackson Irvine. It seems like the Australians are really saving the day for Zach Bowley at the moment. One very happy co-host right here. But yeah, I mean, it's simplistic what they do. It worked out here in the end as well. And I mean, this is the thing. We talked about this last week when we were discussing Magdeburg with the draw and then all the scenes after with the fans criticizing their performance. Then fast forward to the Kiel game where we both said, well, I mean, it wasn't a good performance. They won. Nobody really knows why they won. What do you take out of that? Fast forward to this game where, as a home fan, I would, excuse my language, but would be very pissed afterwards, because you essentially lose this game due to just not taking care of the basics.
Yeah.
And only probably focusing on the play you would mark as offensive players and just say, okay, well, the rest of the players can do whatever they want. So, and that's where I just question it. I mean, we didn't really talk about Maximilian Ullmann yet, who came in at as a winter transfer. He, especially in the first half, I thought had some good scenes that worked well together with Artic. But it seemed like they were just completely forgetting that they could add another goal to the score sheet after that Castagna's chance.
Yep.
Yeah, that's... I just have questions. And this is where... I don't know where the fans were going with... Like, this is just my personal opinion. But yeah, in the end, obviously... And that's, I mean, when Paderborn and St. Pauli will meet in 2 weeks, you at the moment have number or clubs 2 and 3, and then the last 4 games form-wise playing against each other, both 12 points in the Darmstadt is above them, and yeah, or above them is probably, I think Paderborn is number one, but it doesn't really matter. They're all three like this. They had a very good run so far, you could say. So this is going to be actually very interesting, what I said in the beginning. And yeah, for Magdeburg, they kind of showcase once again, because it isn't enough to just win one game. You keep on going because it's like, this is what we have been saying for weeks now since the season restarted. And yeah, it's, you really have to get going. It's not going to be easy. Like, they're playing Hanover, Kaiserslautern, and Paderborn. It's going to be tough to say the least. They, especially like against Kaiserslautern, I would assume they will have huge majority of the ball, a lot of possession, and going to be tough to do something with that, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a real chance against Hanover. Hanover have proven to be quite beatable at the start of this, the Rückrunde, because they also can't defend. I wouldn't count them out in that game. Not at all. And obviously St. Pauli, Rostock at home. That will be a very spicy game. Off the pitch in particular, the police are going to be very busy that day, that's for sure. But really interesting to see where these two teams are going. But Magdeburg, yeah, it's as the season progresses, they need to match what everyone else is doing. And they did that on the weekend. They matched everyone basically losing. So it's not a big loss situation. Let's take our final break. And on the other side, we're going to go to our Group 3 games. We're going to look at our kick tip and podcast recommendations. So we're going to start with the so-called Topspieler of Match Day 21. It was Rostock and Darmstadt. if you are counting at home, Darmstadt entered match day 21 on a 19-game unbeaten run, with their sole defeat happening on match day 1 against Jahn Regensburg. They made the long journey north to the Ostseestadion in Rostock to take on a Hansa side that's have been a bit up and down, but they did take victory last time out. The hosts were actually quite positive in the first half. They actually kept Darmstadt for at least the first 43 minutes without a shot on goal. They had a few chances of their own, but they were a little bit wasteful. Now remember the word wasteful, because it would come back to bite them late in the second half. Their inability to score eventually caught up with them. As Darmstadt started to turn the screws, their chance would come. It would come from a set piece, and it would come through Philipp Tietz, as we teased earlier in the podcast. Now, re-watching all the highlights, and I like to critique goalkeepers, as you know. I was once one. Not a very good one, but, you know, capable enough. That is the worst free kick to concede as a goalkeeper. Not only do you get beaten at what is your near post, but you have, in essence, a clear side of the ball for the majority of it. Now, Ryan Malone is in a sort of like a mid-wall, his own isolated wall away from the main wall. And maybe he loses it for a tenth of a second, but that seemed to be enough to put him off. It's a wonderful finish from Tietz, and he was quite ecstatic, emotional. His facial expressions really showed a case of a lot. It looked like he'd been hit or something, but and he did have blood nose in the end. But yeah, that's the only goal of this game. It was a difficult game to watch. Darmstadt were very meh. They were meh. They were average. But, again, they found a way to get a result. They continue this incredible unbeaten run. And at a good time, too, because their next two games are against Hamburg and Heidenheim. Only the Hamburg game is on the world feed. The numbers tell the tale. They were subpar in this game, but they did enough to get the 3 points and continue the run, whereas Hansa, again, as we've mentioned, as the teams in that bottom 6-7, they didn't lose anything by losing, but they could have really gained a lot had they taken a point or three. Just a quick word on this one. We should talk about Darmstadt, because the second half they were a lot more active. They had the Malem chance in particular was probably the one that stood out, the one that rattled the woodwork. But they're going to have to be a lot better if they're going to beat Hamburg on the weekend.
Yeah, funny enough, there is some similarities for Darmstadt and HSV, both coming off a game where probably not the most convincing performance. Where you still got 3 points, but probably not the most convincing performance before you get into a really important game like that one. For Rostock, in a way, we've seen this once again, that sort of performance. It was the game against Heidenheim, where you had that 45 minutes where they did not create the most chances themselves, but defensively stood very well, and wasn't just not enough in the second half. Bit similar here, obviously. I mean, 26 shots on goal in the end. It's just a bit disappointing for them, obviously. But if you only have an XG of 0.62, so it does not really speak for your quality of shots, I would assume, to say the least. I mean, for Darmstadt, we kind of know that they're going to win those games. We've seen it against Braunschweig last week. We've seen it now. They just pick up the points, and this is how, like, we've seen teams in the past. There's normally teams that get promoted in the end because they pick up 3 points, even in games where they don't look like they're going to have a comfortable win. It's just very difficult to get any points off Darmstadt at the moment. And obviously you have to say that they did improve in the second half. They really tried to get the train rolling, you could say. I mean, you had especially Rundstadt and teams really increased the pressure there. And yeah, maybe So probably in the end, considering the second half, it was deserved. But yeah, Rostock really has to. I mean, obviously, this is not the game where you expect them to pick up points, but it is a bit. It is disappointing for them that in games against Heidenheim, against Darmstadt, where they don't look like they are essentially a league difference, it is a bit worrying that they don't pick up the points. At the same time, they have three games coming up where they, at least two of them, where they feel a bit more comfortable picking up the points, maybe Karlsruhe, Hanover. And this is obviously especially the Karlsruhe point game where they have to kind of wanting to get a similar result like against Bielefeld last week. Like, those are the games they have to win then. Obviously, can build up their confidence at the same time. This is what I said before, we're at the stage in the season where picking up confidence is not worth it if at some stage it is not giving you the results to get you out of where you're at.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about picking up points at the right moment, as if there is a right time to pick up points. It's just all about consistency and accumulation. And yeah, I think in my opinion, they should have got something out of this game. I thought Rostock applied themselves well, but once Darmstadt did start to get on top, there was this sense of inevitability that Darmstadt were going to score, because we've seen it all season long with them, with Darmstadt, that they almost tease you a little bit it's like a scary movie in a way, where you can just, the music starts to intensify a little bit more, and you know there's sounds and the main character is a bit unsure with what's going on, and as the music continues to intensify, you can just see that the whatever the scary thing is starting to increase its presence, and then eventually it gets you. And then that's it. So they did that. Now, let's talk about Regensburg, who entered the match day bottom of the table. They took on a Hanover side that have yet to score points. 2023. It's been pretty miserable for the team from Lower Saxony, who obviously expected so much more. They got off to an awful start. They conceded a pretty ordinary goal. Leon Guevara with a wonderful ball to the back post. Similar to the goal that was scored by Hamburg, the 2-1. Back post, no one tracking. Sarpreet Singh this time, putting the ball in the back of the net for the 1-0. Now the contentious moment of the game. Early in the second half, there was a scene between Sayed Moroya and, I think, Andreas Albers. Now, looking at this particular scene a billion times over, I cannot understand how Max Buder, the referee, came to the conclusion that there was any foul whatsoever. And this is, again, just my opinion. I'm no referee. But to me, there seemed to be next to no contact whatsoever. And the amount of views that they showed in the highlights and throughout the game, I'm amazed that they didn't call the referee to come over and have a look at it. Luckily, we have things called football gods and karma and all kinds of things, and they were very much present to help Ron Robert Zieler, who should get all the credit here, who made a really good save for the penalty against Andreas Albers. And just to make sure that the gods weren't done, Hanover would score a bone-crushing equaliser 2 minutes from normal time. And what a goal it was. Regensburg were looking to clear, Cedric Toiker has many options. Shooting seemed like the lowest percentage option of those, but didn't he catch it well through the crowd of players, and it beats Jonas Urbik, who was, again, it's a scene of watching him keep. He's quite flamboyant in that he always looks like he's going to be close, but it never is close enough. But he looks flashy. It's great to watch, but if he saved it, it would have been a cracking save. It's a cracking goal, and, the points are shared in the end. It means that Regensburg move up to 17th, so progress. It definitely gives Salim Begovic maybe a little bit more time by picking up a point. For Hanover, the kitchen is starting to get a little bit hotter in the kitchen. They've been woeful, and the biggest issue was defensively. And again, in this game, they weren't particularly great on the defensive end. And not even maybe, they were very fortunate to pick up a point in Regensburg on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and I mean, we're talking about the two less informed teams at the moment, but they're coming from very different points, you would say. I mean, after this game, I read it somewhere and not completely should have checked it before, but it looks like Martin Kind and his bingo is at it again, saying they want to build a squad for promotion. Yeah, I mean, at the moment, I just don't know. I mean, I said it at the during parts of last season, or at the first leg of the season, I wasn't convinced. There were too many question marks for me. The expectations are too high at Hanover, and 2023 does prove me right in a way. And it's just like, it's not even that they are unlucky in how they concede or how they're not managing to pick up the points they want. It's just that they don't deserve to. Like, even in this game against Regensburg, who are not in a good form, they make easy mistakes. And I mean, I would totally agree with your assessment of the penalty. It isn't one for me either, but still, like, even the 1-0 can never happen defensively. There's always one player who negatively stands out. Obviously, for that scene, it was Arianby, because, like, similar to probably what happened for I think Kastrup. For Jimra in the Nürnberg game, no idea what he tries to do in that scene. Like, it's not clearing the ball, obviously, and then you can see goals like that. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, in the end, obviously, for teams in the bottom half of the table, it was good that Hanover got a point. But I'm still not completely sure whether it was deserved. They had their best chances, in my opinion, in those first opening minutes, until essentially Jan Regensburg decided they wanted to get in as well. So yeah, not sure. So the first 50 minutes were maybe, and then they just completely stopped. They had two shots on target in the first half, and I think that was Bayer, and then that scene with Urbik against Heuchert, and I think that essentially was it.
Yeah, there's really not much more to say. That both sides have really big games coming up. Hanover, as we mentioned, home to Magdeburg, Regensburg at Karlsruhe on Friday night, which brings us to our final game of match day 21, which is Sandhausen and Karlsruhe. Ali Schwartz up against his former side that he took to promotion a few seasons ago. And it's fair to say that Karlsruhe, it's all good again. Everything's fine. And it was Marvelous Marvin Vanitzek who was at it again. This dude, when he's such a joy to watch when he's playing really good football. I love it. He had two assists in this game. He assisted the Jerome Gondorf opener. I've got gone for some reason. Really good at spelling. I promise you, I am literate. It's a wonderful ball. Good finish from Gondorf. And then he assisted Kaufmann on 52 minutes. Just playing the smart ball. Get the ball across. Kaufmann picked an interesting choice, the nearest of near post, and he squeezed it past Druvers' leg and the post. And then Fabian Schleusner for the 3-0. He just went up and got it. Let the big fella cook, and he cooked. Great ball from Kaufmann just to get it up there, and Schleusner beat Zvirov to the ball. 3-0 your final, and that means it's game over for Alias Schwartz. There's an irony about losing to your ex-club and ending up losing your job, but it's been coming. They've been awful. They're now bottom again. Just the shock. I'm amazed that this was an option for Sandhausen, but Thomas Oral, who his recent resume was Ingolstadt, Ingolstadt, and Ingolstadt, where he led the he coached them for three games in the playoffs. It's been extraordinary, and how he got them eventually over the line at the third attempt, but then didn't get the job, and the rest is history. Really interesting choice, but it does magnify that there may be a lack of coaching quality within German football, but also how hard it is to find a good coach during the middle of a season. I mean, they're not, you know, they're not growing on trees. Let's put it that way, you know. So let's talk about Sandhausen. The Karlsruhe were great, despite the fact that they looked like a mix of mustard and ketchup, or tomato sauce, as we call it, on a kit. Representing McDonald's very well. Sandhausen were just, again, awful. They can't get anything going in the attack. You mentioned last week about how adding Hamidi Al-Ghadoui to the mix has kind of nullified what their strengths are, but even still, they could have anyone up top and it wouldn't matter. They just lack cohesion in all three phases of the game. And again, just another bad performance. And they've done so well for so long to dodge relegation, but it's starting to feel real for them. You know, I think over the last few seasons where they've always found ways and you always feel like, well, this time, you know, like they'll go down this time, and they don't. But something feels a bit different. It's much like Erzgebirge Aue of last season. It's just the aura about this team doesn't feel the same as in previous years. And I'm just not so, as the season progresses, I'm just not so sure they can find a way out.
Yeah, I would tend to agree, because, like, once again, when you fight four match days into the year and you just come off a 2-month break, what did they think would happen in this four games? And it, like, obviously nothing really changed for them. And like, there are the same problems there that were there in winter. And Thomas Ora, he was announced so quickly. That you always tend to think there was a backup plan all along. Yeah. I mean, over Kashinov would be free as well, just to nullify everything that happened in the last 1.5 years. No, but honestly, I mean, I spoke to Lewis about this, obviously, our Sandhausen expert resident. And he didn't really find the words either. And it just doesn't scream perfect solution. At the same time, not to be disrespectful, but Sandhausen especially, like, I mean, doesn't scream interesting task. So does half of the teams in the Zweite Liga, let's be honest. But I'm not sure. And I'm not sure if, I mean, Thomas Ural has the tendency to prove my expectations wrong for like 3 days to then completely agree with them for the rest of the season. So, like, I'm not really sure. And yeah, they just made it Karlsruhe way too easy in this game. Like, there are at least two passes to the first two goals should never be able to happen. Like, the Vanitek pass should never be allowed to happen in the Zweite Bundesliga defense, let's be honest. And then just defensively, too many problems. Bachmann, Chirov, not sure what they were doing. Chirov especially obviously it's a bit difficult because it's a deflected ball, but the way Chirov is apparently only jumping for a header if he wants to score a goal himself on the other side of the pitch. Not sure. And I'm not sure if at this stage it can help. Like, I mean, Alois Schwarz was from the get-go a comfortable choice in a way. And Thomas Ural, yeah, I'm not sure. He has no opportunities to change anything squad-wise now. And that's why, like, when I think this was, in a way, always a security net, why it didn't happen earlier. Once again, I don't want people to lose their jobs, but yeah, I just really question what was the idea going into 2023. And I mean, especially, obviously, I understand why you would change when you play Nuremberg next, but at the same time, like, the games against Kiel and Kaiserslautern are not going to get easier either. So yeah, for Karlsruhe, it will be vital. Once again, they play Regensburg and Rostock next. So what we've been talking about for all the clubs, doesn't matter if you win one game, if you don't, keep picking up points. So that's what they need to do, because at the end of the next three games, Hamburg awaits. And this is where we potentially think they won't pick up the points.
Yeah, it's a real opportunity for Karlsruhe to really separate themselves from that relegation scrap. The signs are there. I mean, a clean sheet, always welcomed, but Sandhausen were never threatening. Second game in a row, they failed to have a shot on target. I mean, they could have played me in goal, let's be honest, and they would have kept the clean sheet. Right, so yeah, we'll see what happens, but yeah, of course, we don't condone anyone losing their job. We're just critiquing the process. If you sack someone four games into the Rückrunde after having a 10-week layoff, yeah, that's all we're saying. Right, we'll move over to our kick tip. After 21 match days, Alex is still leading. He is starting to put a gap. He's showing Bayern how to Bayern, which is incredible. 252 points, 25 points. Are you kidding me? 25 points in a kick tip. Are you serious?
Teach me.
Well,
we either do our jobs very well and not listening to our own advice.
No.
Or he just doesn't listen to us at all. It's fun proving us wrong.
We'd love to hear from Alex, because I think what it is we are both jinxes. So obviously listening to us in a sort of tipping area is just don't, because it's clear that the results are, you know, paving the way. So congrats, Alex. Well done. I'll see if anyone can catch you. It's starting to look unlikely. We do have a podcast recommendation. It's been a while since we've had one, and this one is very close to home. If you're fans of Formula One, which I am, there is a podcast that might be for you. It is called Couple on the Grid. Jake and Stephanie are both new fans of Formula One. Well, new as in they started to follow Drive to Survive, and the rest is history, as you would know. They've got episode zero, so you get to know Steph and Jake, who they are, what the podcast is about. It's a very friendly, I quite enjoy it. They've got obviously great chemistry as partners, but yeah, go check them out. They've got a new episode coming out on Friday when Drive to Survive season 5 comes out. So yeah, definitely give them a listen. Give them a follow on their socials. It is Couple on the Grid. That's it for us. It has been a bit of an extended podcast. Lots of additional content, we should say. So let's just say that the fourth official gave us 15 extra minutes to talk about what needed to be said. That's it for us. We're going to take a break, reevaluate everything, and look forward to all the action from match day 22. And we'll be back on Wednesday to discuss all of the action. Until then, have a fantastic weekend. Stay safe, and we look forward to speaking with you when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.